Just when we took the break, a woman came up and lit a candle and asked me if it was okay. It's a candle to commemorate solstice, which is tomorrow. So here we are in the deep, dark gulch of winter. And I know last week we were talking about how we're all connected to the events that are going on, not only in immediately around us, but all around the world on a 24/7 basis, and the suffering that we can absorb as a result of it, and the breathing techniques that we can use to release it through the portal of compassion, breathing it out as clarity. And I promised that this week I would tell a more uplifting story. So, I want to tell the story of creation, because with every death, within every death, there is the seed of birth. And within all darkness is the seed of light. And we are in the gulch of darkness, but we are celebrating the season of lights. As I could see, driving over from Marin through San Francisco, everybody has some kind of lights that go on and burn through the night. And even though light is a very, very interesting factor in our awareness and how our awareness connects us to experience, or what we call experience, in every Genesis story that I'm familiar with, it is sound. It is sound that is the initiator of Genesis. So in the Judeo-Christian, in the Jewish Genesis, it is the Word of God. In the Hindu Genesis, remembering that Hinduism is the foundation of Buddhism, there is a concept called Bindu. And Bindu, for all of us who remember our geometry class, is like that point that is so infinitely small that even the sharpest pencil cannot draw it on paper. And yet, that Bindu is the source of all creation. So, what transforms that Bindu into infinite form is sound. Some kind of a reverberative factor that opens it up so that it unfolds and becomes what the Hindus call Brahma, the great, great, great God that encompasses everything. In the scientific cosmology, it's called the Big Bang. And bang is also a sonorous word. So, interestingly, scientific and specifically the technical cosmology is getting very, very congruent with the cosmology of 5,500 years ago. So there is this Bindu, and sound reverberates through this infinitesimally small point. And out of it is born the eternal Brahma. And Brahma is defined as a god, but it's being, beingness, universal beingness, unified, one. And as in everything that is generative, there is an umbilicus, there is a kind of uroboric cycle that generates everything. And in Brahma, it is called the belly button, and out of the belly button arises a stem. And on that stem is a blossom. And that blossom opens, and it is the lotus. And Brahma, being everything, notices this lotus. And all of a sudden, the one has individuated. And on that lotus sits the second god called Indra. And so from the one comes the two. And from the two comes the infinite variety of forms. So in Hinduism, there is a concept called Leela, the play of form. It's just a game. It's just an ecstatic effervescence of being. When Brahma recognizes that there is a companion, Indra, and the two of them are very delighted, and they say, "What shall we do?" And they decide they're going to play. And Brahma says to Indra, "What game shall we play?" And Indra says, "I've got this wonderful thing that I can do. I can cast an infinite net." Think of the net as kind of the woof and the warp that the carpet of reality is woven on, which is what the Sufis do believe. That's why they have carpets that they pray on. I'll tell you a story about that later. And at the crossing of every one of those threads in that infinite net is a diamond, a perfect diamond. And every diamond reflects every other diamond. And the nature of diamonds, as we all know, is that it's the hardest thing, at least in our reality. They're even predicting that there might be some planets out there that have been so hot that they are diamonds, if you can imagine that. That must be where Elizabeth Taylor is right now. But what else does the diamond have as an attribute? It reflects absolute clarity of light. And it refracts it perfectly. And it is purely translucent because it has no impurities. And that's what makes it so special and so rare. And so often, not in our traditions of spirituality, but in Eastern traditions of spirituality, there are many texts and there are many stories that are called the Diamond Sutra, diamond cutter, and that kind of thing. It responds and refers us to the clarity and the perfection of just being a transmitter of light. Which takes us to the principal mantra in Vajrayana, in Tibetan Buddhism. Anywhere that you go in Tibet, I've never been there, you will climb through the vast mountainous areas and into the Himalayas. And everywhere that you go, you will see rocks that have imprinted on them the Vajra mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. Again, referring to the principle we're talking about. Om being the sound that reverberates and begins to generate the universe. Mani being gem, Padma being lotus, and Hum being the sound of perfection of everything that is created as it resonates through the heart. So the lotus is what we have all experienced. That's why we're here, an opening up of awareness to something that is transcendent, that is liberating, that promises relief, or as we like to say, refuge. But once our awareness is open and we come and sit on Tuesday evenings or go to retreats or are mindful for 20 minutes at home or remember with a breath in the middle of the day and drop into becoming aware in that moment, every one of those moments allows us to begin to translucentize ourselves. The awareness takes us to that place where we can actually become like the diamond, pure and clear, free of any internal obstructions. And every facet on the face of that diamond is what we do When we work within ourselves, we polish, we clarify. So we are the infinite diamonds on the infinite net of all being. So the question is, when we do reflect upon ourselves, how do we do it? Because so often, especially when we contextualize this practice inside of the spiritual realm, how much of ourselves do we reflect on with a sense of criticism or self-judgment? And reminding ourselves that there's so many things that we feel so terrible about, we don't even allow ourselves to become aware. The kind of lurk underneath our consciousness, but sometimes show up as behaviors we just don't even know where they came from, or as dreams. So as we polish every facet that we discover within ourselves, the way to polish is not to be critical, or to get all kinds of other alternative behaviors that would look much better in the eyes of anybody that is holy, or in the eyes of anybody whose love we want to keep, including ourselves. The way is to receive it without judgment. And the only way to really receive it without judgment is to remember that every one of those diamonds is identical to each other. The understanding of individuality or of personhood is completely dissolved in that context. And if we want some support in dissolving this holy idea of who we are, or what I'd like to call the me project that we're always hammering away at, we can do what the great Hindus do and put it into a context that is so huge and so vast that our self-importance melts like a snowflake on water. So, Indra casts this eternal net, and it expands and expands and expands and expands, and out of it generates all the infinite forms that delight us, that are really just a form of light and sound playing together, nothing else. And it expands for 37,000 kalpas, which somebody decided is 310 trillion years in our time. And when it has expanded to that amount, it begins to contract for another 310 trillion years. So that's a very, very, very expanded time frame. And within that time frame, we get some perspective on the things that seem very, very compelling and important to us in the moment. And the expansion is called the day, and the contraction is called a night in the life of Brahma, who has many, 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 many days and nights. So, it's an ever-expanding context of infinite, infinite, infinite forms and time. And when we allow ourselves to really get a little comfortable within the largesse of that context, then we can take ourselves a little more lightly. And when we take ourselves a little more lightly, we become a little more accepting of the things that we confront ourselves with moment to moment, day after day, as just little impurities that we can let go of. As they arise, we can watch it arise, and then we can watch it go away. So it's a kind of a personal tonglen. Here is this form of impurity. We could call it suffering, but let's just call it impurity, which is also very judgmental, but occlusion from gemology. All these little occlusions that arise that define who we are and also define our suffering. or our pleasure, because in every pleasure there is a little dot of suffering that grows, and in every form of suffering there is a little dot of pleasure that grows. Everything has got this yin-yang cyclic quality arising from itself and turning slowly into its opposite. So if we can allow ourselves to be cyclical in that way, observing what arises and noticing that we have to be directed towards the kinesthetic, towards sensation. Sensation and even light or vision are not our primary modes of being in touch with ourselves and are not the primary modes of being affected at the effect of what is both outside of us and inside of us. It is sound. It is what we hear within ourselves, the infinite stories. And then it is what we hear outside. Even here in this room, as we are sitting, developing more and more and more concentration, the individual concentration, the group gathering concentration, supporting deeper practice. If something is going on in the street, like a siren or a motorcycle, it immediately resonates through our bodies and impacts us, even for just a moment. We have to kind of readjust ourselves and get back to where we were, which is just an expression. There are times, I know I've experienced it, I imagine a lot of you in this room have experienced it, when even amidst all the turbulence, a mind going really crazy, all kinds of stories going up and down, part of them we chase, some of them we just drop, some of them we've heard so many times we're bored already, but they keep arising. There is, as if the whole engine of generativity, of that form of inclusion or suffering, gets tired, loses fuel. There are times when we don't know why, it just stops. And even if we don't experience the just stopping, there are times, and I have had this experience, when you hear a very high tone pitch going through between your ears. And it really does bring your awareness into sharp, relieving focus. And it is an experience of transcending the continual movement of being ourselves. So there are scientists who claim that there is a harmony in the spheres, that there is some kind of a music that goes on between the heavenly bodies. And there's a great Buddha that is always holding his ear. I know that you know that Buddha. You know, the particular gesture of listening, listening closely. I think that's one of the reasons that we bring the sound of a bell ringing to you as an invitation to go inside and practice. And every time that we have a sound, either outside or inside, we generate a new infinite reality, which might not be unfamiliar, but is a new iteration or a new cycle of some fragment of the same story that we tell ourselves. So very often in a lot of spiritual traditions, the idea is to cultivate listening. I know it's something that's really, really important in transactions between ourselves and others. But listening to oneself. Taking the time to really, really listen deeply. Not just to the headlines that we're shouting within ourselves all the time. But listening to the body of the story, listening between the lines, listening to the silences. Because in that we do have the power, like Indra, to generate reality upon reality that infinitely reverberates, if not just in this lifetime, but across many, many lifetimes, and not just with us, but with everything that is in contact with us. Because there's really no way of isolating what our experience is into just how we talk to ourselves inside. It affects our neurology, it affects our hormones, it affects the temperature of our skin, it affects whatever energy we radiate beyond the skin. It affects all of our communication, our visual contact with each other. It radiates infinitely and generates universes. So part of that polishing of the facet, every single facet of ourselves, or what we call ourselves, that arises as we listen. If we listen very, very carefully, we can also hear our judgment, our contraction around what it is that is coming forward to our attention. And in that recognition, we can expand and drop it. And every time that we drop that judgment, we loosen a little bit of our dependency on a sense of ourselves. We become a little larger. We become a little more porous. We become freer and liberated from the constraints of identity, which is really the only liberation that we can seek. So that's me, that's my sermon at for this moment. I would love to hear some of your own wisdom and your own stories arising from this special time of year, this special year. Just with the generosity of sharing and also asking, yes? Yeah. So, your name is?
Shauna.
Says she's been feeling herself being really, really nasty lately, and it's really hard recognizing that aspect and letting it go. Does it help if you punish yourself? Exactly. So, you know, the Dalai Lama has the wonderful answer to that. You know, all suffering arises from suffering. So if you're nasty to others, you can apologize. Oh, my God, you know. But you want to understand that where it arises from is the fact that you are suffering yourself. Because if it makes you uncomfortable to be nasty, that's QED. You're not a nasty person at heart. So, very often, finding yourself being nasty to others or quick-tempered or somehow or other something different than what you'd like to be means that you are really in a state that is in pain and you deserve your own inner ear. Yeah? Listen, see what's going on for you. You know, it's a tricky thing to not be in judgment. We really, really have gotten, we were sold a bill of goods that if we judge, we can come to salvation. when I think of the fundamentals of how we sit, I hope I'm not offending. I'm Jewish. In the Judeo-Christian cosmology, God created everything, but then his next role was to judge. Conscious of the fact that we call it a man, and conscious of the fact that that is really, there's been a lot of punishment going on for bad behavior in the cosmology that we are taught, and that continues into our education, and it just reverberates. And my question is, does punishment work? It's kind of like saying, you know, does capital punishment work? And we really are hardest on ourselves. We sometimes have more understanding, more compassion, more expansive, heartfelt musings of other people and their behaviors than we do for ourselves. We're really, really hard on ourselves. So you could say it's because we're the most important person in our lives, or the person that we feel most responsible for. But every bad behavior is a response to suffering that has been inflicted, and nobody really owns it. I mean, there is judicial organization in society, that's true, but very often individuals are expressing something that is going on in the group. So being able to drop judgment doesn't mean that we support any behaviors that cause suffering. We don't support behavior that causes suffering. But I'm not sure that judgment and punishment is effective at changing it. But we have to understand how conditioned we are to be in judgment and punishment mind. It's very important. Retribution, eye for an eye, I'll get back at them. It's carpets of suffering. So I wanted to tell you the Sufi story about the carpet. It's got to do with judgment. There is a man who has been convicted to a life of imprisonment, although there wasn't very much that man did wrong. But the conviction was a conviction, and he was put in a cell. And he was allowed one visit per month from his wife. Other than that, he was isolated. And if he was like you and me, given enough time, he could figure out the reasons that he deserved it. So every single month, the wife would come in with a basket of fruit and bread and cheese and whatever little goodies might lift his spirits from her home to his cell. And after 3 years, I forgot a detail. One day, she brought in a very large loaf of bread, and as he broke the bread, there was a prayer carpet, a prayer rug, hidden in that bread. And he hid it under his mattress. But there was a certain time of the day that he would pray. And he would roll the carpet out, and he would get on his knees, and he would do the thing of praying. And he would touch his head to the carpet with his eyes open so that he wouldn't lose his balance because he was weak. 3 years later, one of the guards came in for the usual morning check, and the door of the cell was wide open, and the cell was empty, and the man had escaped. And what was left was the carpet on the floor of the cell. And so they looked more and more closely on it and studied it, and they couldn't understand. They just didn't know how to explain this escape. And so they themselves paid as much attention to this carpet as the prisoner had done, and they realized that woven into the fabric of this woof and warp was the inside structure of the lock of the prison gate, his door. There was no way his wife didn't tell him that. There was no way for him to know it. It was just that every single day he would bring his head with eyes open to the pattern and rise up day after day, week after week, month after month, noticing. And 3 years later, the insight dawned on him that he was actually looking at the way that he was locked into his cell. And seeing that, he could open it and be released. So that's a wonderful, wonderful Sufi story of how to liberate oneself through awareness, attention to what it is that locks us up. We might not even realize that that is what we are looking at when we practice. It might just look like the same old pattern we've been noticing every time we go to the cushion. But because we are all diamonds on that eternal web and woof of life, we are all looking at that very thing that we can use to liberate ourselves. And we're looking at the same thing. Even though we can't name it, it's still a big mystery. Nobody has given us directions saying if you do it this and this and this way. They do, but it doesn't quite work that way. There comes a point when you have to drop the directions, just do the practice for the sake of the practice. In this case, because he was imprisoned and there was nothing else for him to do. But that is our condition. There's really nothing else for us to do. Everything that we do has the key to the inner lock of our liberation. This very moment, this very breath you are taking is part of that revelation. Never underestimate one moment of attention and its power to give you freedom. Because you never know when that 3-year period is up for you. So any other comments or questions? Yeah. These things are being recorded, and I think that, yeah, so a couple of people emailed me and said, you know, where can I hear it? So I think these are being recorded for that very reason, and I don't know how long it takes for them to get into that system of being able to hear it as a podcast or something. I think it's a couple of weeks, but it's going to be available at some point. We lost the one from last week. I'll have to do Tonglen again. It's always good to do it as often as you can. But this one will be recorded. Yeah. Yeah. It's so much fun telling stories, you know. Stories are really the grasping that we have towards and making an attempt to populate this experience with wonderful, wonderful, wonderful detail. Where there's an Indra in all of us. We're doing it all the time. But there's also the understanding that we are polishing all the time and we are becoming more radiant. I'm sure that you can feel yourself being more radiant. Sometimes. And to remember that, how you
chance to express appreciation.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's fun, it's fun. You know, my mind is always a jumble driving over here, and I'm thinking, what am I going to say? Oh, my God, you know, oh, my God. And it gets, you know, I'm like you. I'm like you. I'm not the 1% here. You know, it gets more revved up, and then it quiets down, and then I get an insight, and then this evening I said, oh, to hell with it, you know. It'll work, it won't work, who cares? I care, but who cares? You know. And then once, you know, you get into this, something happens. And it's because we gather together. That's a part of it. There is a gathering of mindful energy that we all participate in. And it is kind of like entering a pool that supports and sustains and purifies and quiets. And it's a great blessing and it's a great refuge, and I'm always very grateful to be here. So let's just sit for a few more minutes and then...
Before everyone takes off, I just wanted to thank Yvonne so much for being with us. I share Carlos's admiration and gratitude for you sharing your wisdom with us. And thanks for everybody for being here to support each other in this very beautiful time of the year, solstice, and tonight's the first night of Hanukkah, and Christmas is coming up. So thanks so much for being with your fellow Sangha members tonight. And a quick announcement about the Dana. Our rent at the church is $150 every week, and you can offer your generosity, offer support to your fellow Sangha members to allow this group to continue by offering Donna generosity in form of cash in the basket. And then also, Yvonne is here, the goodness of her own heart, and we'd like to support her as well. So both Donna for Yvonne and for the church, or excuse me, for the church rental fund can go in the basket. You can also make a check to the church, St. John the Evangelist Church, and if you do it that way, that'll be tax deductible. You can put Mission Dharma on the memo line, and we really thank everyone for being here. Thanks for your support and the beautiful holiday season. We can see you next week right before New Year's. Take care. Bye-bye. And Yvonne will be here next week as well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.